Welcome to the CHIME Opioid Action Center podcast, where healthcare leaders explore how technology is making an impact in the fight to end the opioid crisis. Here's today's moderator.
Welcome to the CHIME Opioid Action Center podcast. My name is Sean Kelly. I'm the Chief Medical Officer and SVP of Healthcare Strategy at Improvada, and I'm also an Assistant Professor of Emergency Medicine part-time at Harvard Medical School and a practicing emergency medicine physician at BIDMC in Boston. I'll be your host for today's podcast, and I'd like to welcome our guests. We're going to hear from two experts as they describe their journey on how they have built an innovative and highly efficacious Center for Healing to deliver integrated pain, addiction, and behavioral health care in Camden, New Jersey. We will discuss their past efforts, the current state of affairs in the opioid epidemic and at the center, and finish by discussing the future directions they see on the horizon. Our guests today are Dr. Caitlin Baston, who is the Division Head of Addiction Medicine, Medical Director of the Center for Healing, and Medical Director of Government Relations at Cooper University Healthcare in Camden, New Jersey. She's an Assistant Professor of Medicine at Cooper Medical School of Rowan University and is dual boarded in Family Medicine and Addiction Medicine. Dustin Hufford is the SVP and CIO at Cooper Health. He has an extensive leadership experience running clinical, rev cycle, business systems, strategic planning, and various technology initiatives in digital transformation. It's his technology innovation that allows Dr. Baston's clinical and care innovations to flourish. So Dustin and Caitlin, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you do today in your roles at your institution?
Sure, happy to. And thanks so much, Dr. Kelly, for leading this podcast with us and inviting us here. I grew up in rural Ohio, in a very small town, and from a very young age, kind of really reacted to disparities that I saw in people's health on a daily basis. And long winding road later, that wound me to a career in primary care. So I decided to be a family medicine physician. I trained on the West Coast with a focus in maternal child health, and I back then used to deliver babies and did the whole spectrum of primary care. I then really saw that there were a lot of disparities, especially in the perinatal population with substance use disorder. They just weren't getting the care they needed. And I decided to do a fellowship in addiction medicine. So I came to start my career in back to the East Coast in Camden to focus on really integrating addiction medicine and substance use disorder care into academic medicine so that more physicians knew how to address addiction in their day-to-day practice. And I really wanted to build a program that focused around integrated care, especially so that I could continue to care for pregnant and parenting people with substance use disorders. So that's where I started, and we'll talk a lot about where I am today, but I basically spent the last several years building this integrated center, partnering with folks at the state level, the federal level, and of course, hyperlocal at the community and with Dustin to build really innovative program.
All right, a little bit about my background. This is Dustin Hufford. Thanks, Dr. Kelly. As I mentioned, I'm the Senior Vice President and CIO here at Cooper. Been with Cooper for 7 years, but I'll go back a little bit further and kind of tell you how I got into healthcare. So I've actually been in healthcare since I was in college, believe it or not. It was my first part-time job, and I ended up with a federally qualified health center in Philadelphia while I was attending Drexel University. So pretty cool, and got to actually install an EMR there, because that was sort of when everybody was like, oh, we actually need an electronic documentation system. Let's put one of these in. So part-time, helped a small crew install an electronic medical record system way back then. So myself and the others that actually worked there liked doing that so much that we decided to move over to a consulting firm and do it across the country kind of over and over again. So it was a little addicting, if you will. So we did that, and sort of through the consulting path, I started to get more into strategic planning and, you know, how do you operate an IT department within, you know, a clinical practice or a hospital. So great stuff. And then as time went on, we started to focus a little bit more on the consulting side and mergers and acquisitions, where I did a lot of help of both the buy side and sell side due diligence for health systems. So that was consulting. And my very last consulting gig was actually being assigned as an interim chief information officer, actually at a hospital in rural Ohio, similar to where Dr. Braston grew up. And I decided that that was a good time to come off the road since we were traveling kind of all the time and to take a CIO role for my first provider job, if you will. So did that for a couple of years, and that was an exciting time. That was when ARRA came around. So when they started giving money to actually implement medical records, and we had to implement CPOE and all those other fun things to meet the government regulations to get a lot of cash from the government at the time before you hit the stick period, where you were penalized for not having electronic medical records. So complete overhaul of that hospital. We got them all ready and met meaningful use on time. And then we got rolled into ProMedica Health System. We decided to join them as a strategic partnership. So they acquired that hospital where I became the assistant vice president of revenue cycle and business systems. And the timing was perfect because we decided that we were going to actually replace the EMR for the entire system. We picked Epic and we implemented it across, you know, the entire ProMedica Health System over a couple of years. So that brings me to kind of where I'm at today. My family is from this area, so we decided that it's a good move to move back into the Pennsylvania, New Jersey area. And Cooper happened to have a great opportunity for an assistant vice president of applications overseeing the application portfolio. So that brought me here. And I've been here for 7 years and now serving as the CIO since 2019. So
great. Thank you both. Let's talk now about where things stand at the center. I'd love to spin it over to Dustin now. Can you talk about the tech side of things? How have things progressed from an innovation standpoint? And how are you partnering with your business and operations colleagues to enact change? Have you achieved the goals of becoming more innovative and transformative that you've been hoping to?
Yeah, so thanks. So things have come a long, long way, you know, since I got here, since Caitlin arrived at Cooper. You know, I talked about in the last section around, you know, how we needed to develop a strategy. And really, by this point, we've gotten there, right? So we've got strategies in place now for overall kind of technology, like where we're going over the next 3 to 5 years. We've got a digital transformation strategy. We've got a cybersecurity strategy. And we've even gone into domains like imaging and other areas to make sure that we've got, you know, clear roadmaps for the future to start taking advantage of, you know, all this cool stuff that's coming out in the market lately, you know, from an innovation perspective. But, you know, part of the strategy that we put together as, you know, at the top level was, you know, the operating model that we were going to use to actually do all this. And I had mentioned earlier sort of agile, right? Agile has been around for a long time. They've been using it in, you know, the software development world, you know, pharmaceutical companies have been using it for a long time for drug development. You know, it's not just applicable to IT, but in this case, we sort of started with it. So that's what we built, born out of sort of the digital transformation piece. And now we've kind of converted the entire operating model to agile. And the way that works is that we find a product owner, you know, from our business operations, you know, somebody that, you know, has a knack for this, that is really interested in kind of moving their business forward, the business of Cooper forward. And then, you know, often a pretty good acumen for technology, right? Because we need them to really look at some of our services more as products that are end to end, right? We kind of think of a clinical service line in the past as the product, you know, it's the ED service. So we got a staff, clinicians, and everybody around them to provide that service. If you start to think about, you know, end to end the product, you're thinking about like, well, how are they finding you? Like, how are you getting there? How's the team aware? Like, how are you providing the service all along the way that makes it feel like a really tight, integrated product? You know, similar like Amazon trying to sell you something, right? So we put the groups together. We formed agile teams, you know, for digital and really tested that out. And now we've got that, like I said, kind of expanded across all of IT. This sort of differs from what, you know, we've tried to do in the past, you know, from an IT perspective and governing applications and governing projects. We used to get a small group of people together in a room and try to hash out what the priorities are for the whole organization. But But picture that in an organization this big and complicated, like how that conversation goes, it's usually like, well, I don't even know what that application is. How am I going to comment on that? I don't know, you know, anything about that area. So how am I supposed to score this? What we've done is bring it down more to the local level, where we empower people to look at the real problems of the business and ask the question of like, how do we solve this? How do we do this better? And then design out a process, you know, with technologists and medical informatics folks, performance improvement folks, you know, and just data domain experts, you know, like how do we solve this problem? And they do it as an integrated team. So I think that's the biggest change we made recently as part of the strategy. But so far, so good. I think that business partnership model is working. And that's where we work with, you know, Caitlin a lot and her team is, you know, trying to solve problems in the Center for Healing that have been around for a while. And we finally got the tools and technology to do it. The question is, how do we do it right with the right process and flow that is a joy to use from the patients that we serve?
So thank you, Dustin, for describing all the process changes and some of those results on the tech side. You mentioned some of the clinical goals and achievements. Caitlin, can you tell us from a clinical perspective how things have gone and how things are going at the center?
Sure, absolutely. And I think hearing Dustin's story feels very parallel to ours in that it felt a lot at times like we were a startup within a bigger organization, you know, starting so small, having to think on our feet, being very agile and coming up with fast solutions to problems, primarily because we were trying to meet the needs of the community, which were so great and far outstretched our abilities to meet them in the beginning. When we opened the Center for Healing, we had a 600 patient waitlist within weeks. And it was one of the most devastating things for a mission first program to keep having patients walk in every day and having to take down names and figure out how to meet those needs. So we thought innovatively, and from the very beginning, we started something that we call breakfast clubs in each of the southern counties of New Jersey that were really listening rounds and partnerships with all the community players. So the different federally qualified health centers, the syringe access and low barrier programs, some of the people in the community themselves. And we really asked, what are the needs of the community? What do you see are the biggest gaps? And from the very beginning, the need was access. That it was access, access, access. And people talked about 24/7 access. And from the beginning, one of the things that we decided to work on was our emergency department and pathways in the ED to our outpatient practices. So we've had, as I said, some incredible champions from the emergency department, one of whom, Dr. Rachel Herose, is now running our addiction medicine practice. And she has really spearheaded a lot of the pathways that we've created and some of the biggest wins of our program. We have full pathways for treating alcohol in the emergency department and not just stabilizing somebody, but actually starting treatment for their substance use disorder in that moment in the ED with medication and then bridging them to the community. We have pathways for treating opioid use disorder and have wavered back when there was an X waiver, every single one of our emergency medicine physicians back in 2017, which was pretty early for that as well. We then have continued that work and continued training residents and have expanded that also to stabilize folks in the ED with methadone as well. So we can stabilize them to treat their opioid use disorder, their alcohol use disorder, and now have a program called Bridge to Connect for mental health. So our emergency department is that 24/7 access open door. And then what we saw on the ambulatory side was that, especially as COVID came around, even though we had grown and grown and grown and started special programming for perinatal substance use disorders and the geriatric population and, you know, group medical visits and all these innovative programs on the ambulatory side, as COVID came, a lot of our community partners started closing their doors. And even what we had built and grown wasn't enough. And we decided, we made a group effort because we're a mission first program, that when other people closed their doors, we would swing wide open. And we ended up opening a 5-day a week walk-in practice. So on top of doing telemedicine and allowing people to have a lot of access without having to come in person, we converted our entire in-person practice to open access walk-in only, and then had a separate practice for scheduled visits. So this really allowed us to meet people where they were and to to just completely change healthcare access kind of in general, so that people didn't have to conform to appointments. And it's been really successful.
Thank you, Caitlin. What an amazing job of listening to the community through the breakfast clubs and other initiatives to actually address the needs and effect meaningful change. We touched on this briefly before, but I want to get back to the fact that both of you have very complementary skill sets. Many places, those skill sets never seem to synergize and help each other out. Yet here you've managed to partner at an incredible level. How do you do that? Can you speak a little more to that? And how can others in other organizations do so on a similar model?
Yeah, thanks. I can address that. I think, like you mentioned, we both have a similar mindset around innovation and how to really move both of our trades forward. And you know, what we had to figure out is there a symbiotic way to do that? Of course there is. Like, otherwise, why am I running an IT shop within, you know, an integrated health system? It's to enable the types of flows that, you know, Caitlin was talking about in terms of open access models and, you know, the screening that we're doing through different tools like MyChart. I mean, we've got everybody on an annual screening for substance use disorder that's, you know, done in the privacy of their home or on their phone, you know, and then we can route that to the correct people in the back end. And then, you know, the ability to do site-to-site consults, all those kind of things come from, you know, just day-to-day collaboration. And, you know, when we talk about the agile model, it's getting our teams to lean into that and to work together to solve those problems on the ground. And I think it's just been, in general, complimentary that the Center for Healing and specifically Caitlin, you know, has leaned into this and said, all right, we're going to be the first to do this. We're going to do it better. We're going to do it, you know, the right way. And that just works really well when we're trying to implement technology solutions.
Yeah, I think the agile method that Dustin disseminated across our institution is just so conducive to clinical IT partnership. It really fosters that with the small agile teams. And I can't speak enough to how much it lifts up key team members and leaders in both the digital and clinical spaces. It allows them to feel really effective as they're working together and see quick change. So it decreases that friction work that we all feel and all the inertia in giant systems and really increases results, which overall we've both seen increased satisfaction in the workplace. And then that system speaks for itself. Our people try this and it works and they want to do more of it. And of course, we both are innovative leaders and there was some easy partnership from that and our mindsets. But really there's structure here that if others follow, you know, the same results can happen.
Thank you both. Those are some amazing successes. What about the barriers? What barriers do you still see in existence today?
I think some of the major barriers that we're still seeing in healthcare today are kind of big picture things that we talk about at tech conferences a lot. It's data integration and then now data filtration. And it's real on the ground. So I really see it happen in two big places in my work. One is that many of the behavioral health, community behavioral health and social services programs don't have the resources or the technology to be really doing two-way data integration with the rest of health. And we know that social determinants of health and the full whole person healthcare is really how we should be thinking about health. And yet we haven't enabled the social services side to catch up with the health side. And then the second piece, as I said, is filtration. So even where we do have big data integration and we are pulling in records from other health systems, we haven't really perfected filtering that to the provider or the patient to make it as usable as possible. So from a physician standpoint, nobody really has time to open a medical record and go through the 1,000 notes that people have in there and everything that has ever happened to somebody. And this is where I think, you know, AI and some future capabilities could really help us filter that to really useful top line data. And that's how we should be thinking about medical records moving forward.
And Dustin, what barriers do you see? Are there gaps in tech in the current state that hinder moving forward in a more meaningful way?
Yeah, to Caitlin's point, I mean, we're amassing really large data sets, you know, across the country, across the globe. in many different areas, right? So we're storing tons of data within our health system. We're probably duplicating it many times. And we've got other health systems that are pulling that from us and duplicating it again. And then we send it to regional HIEs and to the state and then to federal level. And then we've got initiatives like TEFCA that are coming down the pike here, fast and furious, where the idea is let's get all this data into these central repositories and hopefully we can do something meaningful with them when they're in those repositories. And I don't want to say that we haven't, like there's been, you know, some wins on the ground level with that consolidation of data. But it's really hard to take these different data sets that come from all these different systems and different processes that collect the data and different way that we write notes, you know, from a clinical standpoint and try to make any sense of it, right? So, you know, when Caitlin talked about filtration, like, okay, great, we've got, you know, multiple different areas that we can log into other systems and look at data from other health systems or areas, but A, who has time for that? And B, you know, how do we know that the data that we're looking at can be even trusted when it's coming from all these different sources? And, you know, and sometimes it can, right? Like, I don't want to knock it all. I think one of the biggest thing that's happened recently, has been around sort of the data blocking rules and the advancement of, US CDI standards, to try to get us to a point where we can at least define discrete data fields. You know, I think we're up to like 5,000, maybe it's more now. It keeps advancing with each version of US CDI. And then the idea that maybe it's not these large repositories that need to hold all this. How do we start to create a connectivity framework, more like an internet of healthcare data, where that ownership starts to go, you know, to the person who the data is generated from, right? Namely the patient. You know, I think right now all these data sources are pretty inaccessible. I think it's fair to say, like, I don't know where my data is at, or, you know, what it looks like, or is it accurate, or, you know, how many storage places. I don't know any of that right now. So I think that's a barrier, and an issue that we've got to figure out as an industry, is how do we start to pull that together, and present it in a way that a person can start to use it, in a meaningful way. As an advocate of their own healthcare, you know, in addition to their friends, family, and everybody that's involved. So,
thank you. Let's broaden this discussion beyond your locale. Caitlin, what are you seeing happen in the rest of New Jersey or even beyond?
Like I mentioned earlier, I've really been blown away by the support that we've had from the current administration and several folks working in different departments at the state. One of the most innovative programs that came out of Cooper and is now ready to be disseminated across the state started actually with the partnership of the past Commissioner of Health, Sharif El-Nahal. We created a program and proposed that emergency medical services, so paramedics, could actually start treatment for opioid use disorder in the field rather than just reversing it with emergency naloxone. So after somebody had overdosed, the current state is to reverse that overdose and save their lives and try to get them to an emergency department. But about 50% of those people refuse transport to the emergency department. And of course, depending on what emergency department they land in, they don't all get treatment. And so we actually worked with our paramedic partners and the physician who's the head of our EMS to create a program where paramedics could give treatment in the field after that reversal and actually start the treatment in the moment. And Sharif was open enough to allow us to pilot it. And he wrote an executive order to allow paramedics to give them medicine in the field. So that EMS program that we created ended up being wildly successful. We were able to study it in a partnership with Hopkins and Bloomberg. And we found incredible results from allowing paramedics to give buprenorphine in the field. And that has since been codified in policy to allow it to disseminate across the state. There have been several states that have now adopted that program, and we continue to have incredible partnership with our Department of Health and our Department of Human Services, and we're seeing several of the other programs that we do disseminate across the state of New Jersey, training for emergency medicine providers, training for other healthcare systems to create integrated programs throughout their system. We've also partnered with other states, and we see some real leaders in the field. There's a program coming out of New York called New York Matters, or the Matters program, which is a technology solution to allow people to connect to medication for addiction treatment in an acute setting, and then connect them and bridge them right to care afterwards. And it's a statewide program, and they're looking to help disseminate that into other states and replicate it. And we're partnering with them on that. California has done just an incredible job of disseminating emergency medicine initiation of treatment and bridging. The California Bridge Program is one of the leaders in statewide dissemination of best practice. And it's been a real privilege to be on the front line of this and to watch our state in New Jersey be doing a lot of the leading efforts, partnering with these other states. I'm very hopeful that we'll actually be able to get this work to turn the tide, if you will, and really change the trajectory of the opioid epidemic.
Caitlin and Dustin, thank you so much for describing some of the progress that you've made so far. You know, thank you for joining us on this episode of the Chime Opioid Action Center podcast. And thank you to everyone else listening. Please visit our website, opioidactioncenter.com, for this and other episodes. Take care and be safe.